So let me tell you a little bit more about the organization that I'm representing today. I am, because obviously Zoom makes things a lot more accessible. There might be some of you joining us from outside the boundaries of the advocacy project at Carers Network operating within, which is pretty much central London. So just let me tell you a little bit more about our organization. There'll be a slide at the end of the presentation with my contact details, just should you wish to know more about us or talk to us about a specific matter or refer a specific carer. So as Judith said, I'm Head of Services at Carers Network. We have been providing specialist support to unpaid carers in central London for coming up to 29 years. It's our 30th anniversary. Next. So our vision is that every local carer is recognized and leads a healthy, fulfilling life with control over the caring role. That's extremely important. So to achieve this, we provide carers have services in Westminster, Hammersmith and Fuller, and so as part of our service provision, we have an information advice team. So they deal with mainly with quick queries, most of the time over the phone or on the times where we could see each other face to face, at drop-in services within the community, support with form filling, grant access, accessing priority appointments for Citizens Advice Bureau for specialist advice on housing, debt, benefits, and all of those questions that are vital when you're caring for somebody. We also complete carers assessments. So we complete those on behalf of the local authority. So they are statutory carers assessments. The aim of a carers assessment is to identify the needs of a carer, not the care for, which is something that we always have to stress whenever we start the appointment with a carer, particularly if the first time they have a carer's assessment. This is their time to discuss their needs, their support, what it is that we can do for them. And sometimes it's difficult just to bring the conversation back to that reign. So it's a safe space to discuss the effect that caring may have been having in their everyday life. As Judith was saying earlier, is a role that you wouldn't change for the world, but it does have a serious impact on your everyday life. So it's a safe space for carers to discuss this, and also a good opportunity to promote future planning and emergency care. It's been very topical with particularly with COVID now, how most carers have been really concerned about what would happen, for example, if they were to be admitted to hospital or become ill. So some local authorities operate emergency care plans, and we will talk about them a little bit more earlier, but it's also important to encourage carers to do that future planning and that emergency care planning, so if the situation comes, they are prepared and they don't have to do the thinking in crisis. So we also organize support groups, and we tend to facilitate those in partnership with expert organizations within the communities that we serve. So we organize mental health support groups for those who look after somebody with mental health needs, dementia support groups, learning disabilities, generic support groups for those who don't fit into any other criteria or just don't want to be discussing the particular ins and outs of the care for needs. We also organize training and workshops. It's important that carers feel in control and confident in their caring role, as this has no doubt a positive impact in their well-being. We tend to organize some set topics that we just roll out throughout the year, such as mobile and handling, first aid, etc. But we also adapt to current events, for example, when Universal Credit was first being rolled out, or now with COVID, we've been very fortunate to partner up with two local mental health support organizations in Kensington and Chelsea, Westminster and Hammersmith and Fulham to deliver COVID-specific workshops addressing the increased stress and anxiety, and how to just generally look after yourself in these times. We also organize quarterly carers forums. The forums seek to provide a collective voice for carers on the issues that matter to them. And it's also a good opportunity for those voices to be heard by other professionals within the community. We tend to really follow, as I said, the interest of carers. So we've had chats on safeguarding. We have had chats on the rollout of the GP federations in some of the boroughs, and what the changes for the NHS plan were coming up. So it's an opportunity for both statutory and other voluntary organisations within the boroughs that we work to hear carers' voices, and as we said, for carers to discuss matters that are close to their heart. But not everything is sort of hardcore, and we also have time for fun and just to let go and discuss other things that are perhaps not care related, and do other things that take our mind off things. So we organize outings and social events. So in the times when obviously we were able to socialize outdoors, we had various free or subsidized opportunities for carers to access gallery exhibitions, theater tickets, sporting events. We're incredibly lucky to be based in the heart of London, where there are major attractions that sometimes very, very kindly just donate gifts in kind in the form of tickets for carers to attend certain events. So we always make sure that those are available for carers. As well as our services that I've just described, which are funded by the local authorities that we're part of, we have two voluntary funded projects. One is the End of Life Carers Project, and the other one is Former Carers Project. So the End of Life Carers Project is a dedicated service for carers age 65 or over, and to those that may provide care to a loved one who has either been diagnosed with a terminal illness, is 80 or over, or is in a residential nursing home. This project, I was incredibly moved when I first joined Carers Network, just to find out all of the work that they do with a very special cohort of carers who are a critical stage of their lives, when they are, as I said, about to lose a loved one or just going through the motions. And this is a project that remains unique of its kind and is a true lifeline for those carers that are going through those times of crisis. And it's really very important, yet still, taboo conversations about death, grief, advanced planning, as I was saying. There's lots of discussions about will writing, lasting power of attorney, conversations that are very difficult to have between the people involved. Then sometimes the project addresses the family as a whole, just to make sure that those conversations are facilitated. Our second voluntary funded project is Former Carers Project. Again, this is a dedicated service that is supporting adult carers whose unpaid care role has come to an end. The project supports them in transitioning out of their caring role for up to 18 months. For whatever reason, they may have stopped caring. It's mainly bereavement, but sometimes it can be other reasons, like the carer moves out of area or the carer moves out of area, etc. Caring can happen in the most of unpredicted ways, and you can become a carer overnight. So having a space for carers to transition in a supportive way out of the caring role, it's very important for us, and it's a well attended project. So as any other organization in these times, we've had to adapt our service delivery as a consequence of lockdown, face-to-face restrictions, obviously. So most of the services that I've just described, apart from the outings, although saying that, for our carers week, I don't know if any of you may have checked our website, we did have some virtual staycation traveling, and then there were groups that were commenting it. So we have tried our hardest just to adapt all of our services to an online provision. You may have noticed that we don't provide support services to young carers. This is just the way that is currently commissioned within the boroughs that we're in. So the Young Carer Support Service is facilitated in-house by the local authority children and families teams. And it might, this might look different in other boroughs across London if you're joining us from other boroughs. So it may not necessarily it may not necessarily be separate. So we've all have to adapt to this new reality of being at home, and carers are no exception. In some cases, as we're saying, people have become carers overnight with no warning given or chance to plan. And you may have seen it, heard it on the news recently, that as the pandemic has brought loads of attention to many have called the hidden army or a hidden army. As it is estimated, and those are numbers by Carers UK, that an additional 4.5 million people in the UK, and that is on top of the 7 million people that were already estimated to be carers, would have become unpaid carers as a result of COVID pretty much overnight. So I have attached a few interesting recent articles that you can read in your own time when we send the slides. They talk about carers being isolated even more than they were already before lockdown, now becoming virtually invisible. The difficulties to get food, for example, as many of them have not been able to leave the house because the person they might be looking after might be on the shielded list, for example, and not being able to access priority slots with deliveries. I have to say that those were conversations that we were having a lot at the beginning of lockdown. This seems to be easing slightly as we progress within lockdown and things are normalizing a little bit. I wouldn't say it's completely eradicated and that everybody can access shopping slots right now, but that was a very, very significant level of queries that we were getting at the very beginning on the first couple of weeks of lockdown. So one clip that I would like to show you is the one. Our chair, Nadia Taylor, appeared in a video call with the Queen, organised by Carers Trust, and that was scheduled to mark Carers Week, which happens every single year in the second week of June, and is a week where care organisations and campaigning organisations raise awareness of carers and carers' issues. And this year, because of lockdown magnifying the carers' numbers, we were lucky enough to be able to participate in this video. The Princess Royal is patron of Carers Trust, which is a national umbrella organization for many local carers hubs. And our chair, she's a carer herself. She cares for four close members of her immediate family. And she's the one on the screen above the Queen. So let us keep our fingers crossed that this is going to work. Oh, you can all see it. Fantastic.
Sonia, we can still see the slide. We're not seeing the video.
Oh, you're not seeing the video?
No.
Okay. Oh, it worked earlier when I played it. Okay. Never mind. Let's do this again. Let me rewind it.
Yeah.
Is it on now?
We've got it. Thank you.
Fabulous.
Officially really since I was 8. I only recognised when I was 11 or 12, so It takes a while for any carer to recognise they are a carer.
Psychiatrist, a nurse, a sociologist, I have to be, or you put all these different hats on, and then you can lose your sense of self as well.
I think we all recognise that we know carers somewhere. We have stopped and wondered how on earth we can help.
Just a little bit of recognition and support goes a long way for MP carers.
Described as the unsung heroes for the odd song, which would not go amiss.
There's young carers up here watching this. I hope that they can see that there are other people in this situation that are similar to them and that they're not alone.
Interesting listening to all your tales and stories, and I'm very impressed by what you have achieved already. So I'm very glad to have been able to join you today.
Right, so I hope that you enjoyed that clip. I have to say that a video like that was shown on every single TV station in the country made our little switch board go a bit crazy for a couple of days. So, but it's great because it really ignited those conversations about caring and carers and who is a carer. So when we're referring to a carer, a definition that you might find in the different local authority plans and health and social care plans is that a carer is anyone who cares unpaid for a friend or family member due to illness, disability, mental health problems, or addiction, cannot cope without their support. So some of you may be familiar with the CARE Act 2014 that actually came into effect in April 2015 and replaced the most previous law regarding carers and people being cared for. And it was quite revolutionary in a way because for the very first time it acknowledged carers as recipients of care and being entitled to have an assessment of need in their own right. So it outlines the way in which local authorities should carry out a carer's assessment, for example, and a needs assessment, how local authorities should determine who is eligible for support, and how it should charge for both residential care, community care. And the CARE Act is focused on adults in need of care and support and their adult carers. As I said earlier, I will be focusing my talk today on adult carers, but I should mention that young carers, so that would be anyone under 18 with a caring role, or the parents of a disabled child, they also have a standalone right to be assessed under the Children and Family Act 2014. So if you are a parent carer of somebody under 18, or you know somebody who's a young carer, they also have the same entitlement to have their needs assessed. So let me tell you a few quick facts about carers. So there was a recent research by Carers Trust, which is a carers umbrella organisation in the UK, saying, as we were saying earlier, that there are 7 million carers in the UK. That's before we realised that another 4.5 million had become carers overnight with COVID. So that is 1 in 10 people. So 1 in 10 people have a caring role that they do probably day in, day out. So we're all likely to know somebody who has a caring role. So if we narrow the age bracket to the 50 to 64, that increases to 1 in 5. And in terms of gender, 58% of carers are women, 42% are men. And the economic value of the contribution made by carers in the UK was estimated in 2017 as being over $500 million with a billion a year. So let that sink in for a minute. And as I said, those figures are pre-COVID that were pre-COVID. Now it's estimated that another 4.5 million have been added to this. So perhaps, as we say, in somebody of you may have, Judith was describing earlier on how she spent 70 years looking after her mum, would have had the experience of caring for a loved one. So sometimes we have carers reporting to us to be looking after their loved ones for up to 50 hours a week, every week. Once a carer told us that caring is more than just a job, it's more than just going to get prescriptions, it's more than doing the shopping, helping the person that they care for to get dressed in the morning. It's a commitment to somebody that you love, and it's supporting their emotional and physical needs, helping them at the same time retain their pride and their dignity. So imagine that that was for a minute, indeed, a recognized paid job. So what would the job description would look like? On the essential attributes list, as one of the carers in the video was saying, you might include patience, tolerance, most definitely endurance and perseverance, inner strength, sense of humor, definitely needed. Ability to communicate to all carers. Just think of the endless visits to health and social care services, having to discuss care plans, care packages with professionals. What would be the qualifications for that ideal candidate? Knowing about nursing, chiropody, physiotherapy, diet probably as well, cooking, hairdressing, of course, finance, being on top of your finances, housekeeping, in gardening, DIY, this is endless. On the salary bracket, well, we'll probably put a zero there. Well, maybe up to a year now, that would be your carer's allowance weekly payment. I believe it's gone up to £67 now and a little bit. So, you know, but you will be able to get your carer's allowance provided that strict conditions are filled and obviously that you were willing to fill in the which might be complicated, and obviously provided that you would know that that even existed. So your hours of work, please be prepared to be on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 hours a year. Of course, no sick pay, no toil, no bank holidays. So now bearing in mind that many carers don't see themselves as carers, and it takes them an average of 2 years to actually come on to services, that is 2 years of doing a job that you may or not be trained for, without the support of a wider team, without no framework to refer to. We know that it can be difficult for carers to see themselves as carers, as they obviously is difficult, it's difficult to see it as a separate role from the relationship that they may have to the person that they look for. So whether that's a parent, a child, a sibling, a partner, doesn't have to be blood related. It could be a close friend, it can be a neighbor. So it's likely that it's going to take a while. And sometimes a particular cohort that we really look after is what we call hidden carers. So those are carers that come to us with 5 years or more of caring experience behind them before they access a support service. So being likely that any of us at any given point might have to take on carers' responsibilities or take on carers' responsibilities, we need to be aware that our lives might be challenging in many forms. Carers juggle their carer responsibilities with work, study, or the family commitments. Some may not even tell others about their caring responsibilities because of the guilt, because of pride, or just other cultural reasons, perhaps. So if you think about the job description that we just went through, this means that the roles and responsibilities that carers have to provide varies widely. They can range from help with everyday tasks, such as getting out of bed, personal care, emotional support, helping somebody to cope with symptoms of mental illness, managing challenging behavior, as we were saying, discussing care packages or best treatment with health professionals. And obviously, as the trend of the aging population continues to grow, there is an increasing prevalence of what you might hear some organizations calling sandwich carers. So those are those looking after their children and at the same time having caring responsibility for an older generation, let that be parents or the significant family members. So this particular cohort of carers, because of their age, they're also likely to be juggling paid jobs on top of their caring responsibilities. So let's take a couple of minutes to talk about the impact that the caring role has on unpaid carers. Just bearing in mind everything that we've heard and the number of carers that sometimes the caring role intakes and the little to no pay that intakes. So one of the first things that are truly felt by carers is social isolation and the impact that caring has on relationships. Just think about it. It's difficult to form relationships when when you have to cancel plans on short notice, when you're feeling that perhaps nobody's going to understand, or you might feel embarrassed, or you don't want to be a burden to others. So there might be a reduction or loss of friends, a social network, when caring truly takes over your everyday life. And COVID has most truly highlighted and enhanced this, as many have not been able to leave their houses for weeks. So in a time when online resources, as evidenced by our talk today, which I suppose in other days would have been taking place in a conference room or a meeting room, it has really proven to us that technology is not a luxury, but an essential. And digital exclusion has become a very, very real thing. And as most of the information and service provision has now been switched on to different types of online delivery. At Carers Network, and we're still continuing doing this, we selected different cohorts of vulnerable carers just to make telephone calls, were welfare check-in calls. We have called in the excess of 1,000 carers now since COVID started, because we acknowledge that not everybody has an email address, not everybody is going to have access to the internet to know what the latest on lockdown measures are or what the latest support or service provision is. We prioritize the carers without an email address, and then we start working onto other cohorts. So financial implications, very important. Financial hardship, debt, fuel, property, poverty. It is so important to make sure that we work with carers on benefit optimization, where appropriate, of course, informing carers what their entitlements might be and make sure that they're just not out of money because of the caring role. They might be entitled to some specific benefits such as carers allowance, etc. Some of them might become in a financial precarious situation because of having to cut down their employment hours or having just to quit work altogether. So it becomes real. Of course, physical health implications. Just think of having to move somebody who is physically impaired from bed to bath to a chair. Think of the back pain, the fatigue of the sleepless night. Probably physical injury if you have been doing all of that work without any training, without really not knowing what you're doing, and just doing that not in a safe manner and then injuring yourself. And of course, as the care role and care hours might fluctuate, you know, depending on the care for health deteriorating, the levels of physical fitness as well and physical well-being might fluctuate. So it's very important just to, when we do our carers assessment, just to make sure that we go through all of these with carers. And of course, never to underestimate the impact on psychological health, stress, depression, sleeping problems, guilt, as we were saying, oh my God, how I wish I had a minute to myself, but oh my God, why am I thinking that is my mom I'm talking about? All of those feelings, mixed feelings, they are not only generated by the caring role itself, but also from trying to navigate the health and social care system that is more often than not, as most of you would know, complex and full of jargon. It has been acknowledged that lockdown has had a negative impact on carers. There was a recent survey by Carers UK, and they're campaigning for the increase on commissioning for mental health services once lockdown is easing. Well-being, of course, consequences on well-being. Just think of the lack of physical exercise. If you're not moving from A to B, but at the same time you're doing a lot of lifting, etc. Lockdown may have increased dramatically the number of caring hours, and obviously included tasks that were previously done by either paid carers, perhaps, or other family members if the caring role was shared. So it is important to acknowledge that respite on lockdown might become either hard to access or just not possible at all. So obviously the impact that that's having on carers' well-being. And finally, the impact on education and employment, particularly on, as we were saying, that sandwich generation that may be on an age of employment. Survey by Carers Trust said that 1 in 5 carers gives up employment just to care for their loved ones. And that young adult carers are 4 times more likely to have to drop out of university or college than any other students because of their caring responsibilities. If you would like to read a little bit more about the impact of the caring role on carers, or just to go through lots of stats, for those of you who like stats and numbers, you might be interested in looking at the State of Care in 2019 survey by Carers UK. I've put a link to it on the on one of the last slides on the further reading bit. Carers UK, again, is another national carers organisation, umbrella organisation for many carers hubs, and they do a state of caring survey every year. And the results, I mean, even for those of us having been in health and social care for a number of years, the results never cease to be astonishing. So, I'd like to put things a little bit into perspective by just talking about real people that we see at Carers Network every day, carers that have access to our services. One of the cases that it was hard to pick one, but one of the cases that has impacted me the most for its complexity, but also because of having a little bit of a happy ending, not 100% of a happy ending just yet, but it's on this wave to a happy ending, or at least it was before lockdown, is the story of a female carer that, for the purpose of this exercise, I'm going to call Emily, but that's not her real name. So Emily is a female, she's 32 years old, and she was caring for both her grandparents. So Emily was very incredibly close to them because they brought her up in the ancestors of her parents. Her granddad was 89 and her grandmother was 85 years old. In 2016, they both became unwell, and she started looking for them. So we supported her for a while as a carer. Then they both sadly died within a month of each other. Emily said that the grandma died first, and Emily was saying that the granddad just died of a broken heart after having spent a lifetime together. So Emily was offering intensive support during the week, but Emily also had 2 young children who were of school age. She lived in a different borough to the grandparents, so she would have to travel back and forth to look after them. And one of Emily's care children has learning disabilities as well. So you can start to paint the picture of how complex this case is. So on the weekends, she would stay with the grandparents. She just moved the whole family to the grandparents, bringing the children with her straight from school on Friday afternoon until the Monday morning. So Emily was just absolutely devastated when they died. Then she became very, very withdrawn and depressed. And she felt that there was a lot of pressure on her, being the closest family member to them, to take care of all of the necessary arrangement, including planning the funeral, what was going to happen with the house, etc. Emily was working for quite a long time of her caring responsibilities, but then in the last stages she had lost her job because of the increasing difficulties of looking after the parent, the grandparents and the children and all of the pressures. So she was receiving carer's allowance and income support. But then obviously when she stopped being a carer, her carer's allowance stopped and she was told that she had to make a universal credit claim. And many of you would know that that wasn't a very straightforward thing to do. We've all heard the endless difficulties that some applicants to universal credit have had to be granted their claims timely. So talking to a caseworker, Emily knew that she had to obviously address her financial difficulties. She was supported to do benefit optimization just to make sure that everything was in place. And in that time of crisis, we were able to apply for an emergency grant just to cover a bit of the gap between her universal credit claim being submitted and it being finally awarded, because her housing became at risk as well because of unpaid rent. So after having had her finances looked at, we have continued to support Emily now for quite a few years. We support carers as I was saying with the former carers project, up to 18 months since death. So we're coming to a close with the support that we will be offering Emily, but she's in a much better place financially. She wants to achieve to her goal to of returning back to employment. She wants to be an administrator at school just to make sure that she can juggle work with her obviously caring for her children. One of them has learning disabilities, and she's also so far enrolled on an IT course just to make sure that she gets herself up to scratch. So that was one of the cases that really impacted me when I first started at Carers Network. Very, very complex case, but it was really great to see the work that the staff put on this and then just seeing Emily just coming throughout. I have a little video here as well, just for you to see a couple of other carers from Carers Network. This is a 2017 video. I have to say that sadly, Rini's husband, Peter, who you'll see in the video, died in January this year. So Rini continues to be supported by Carers Network on her grief. Just let me share it. There you go.
I was married to a lovely man named Cyril. I was his carer officially from 2014.
I look after my wife. After a couple of years of marriage, she started getting that problem.
I'm look after my husband since 2010. It's about 7 years, and he have a complicated health.
Carers Network has been there for me, and they are trying to do various activities so that we get a break, which is very, very good thing for all the carers.
First, I didn't know Carer Network. I don't know anybody. I stuck at home until I found the Carers Network. And then when I found the Carers Network, I say for myself, how lucky I am, because everything I don't know, now pretty much clear in my head. What I can get help, what I can do, and what they can help me for that.
My husband used to paint, and on the corner there is pictures that he made of Grand Canyon, and they're beautiful. And I always said, oh, I want to go there. But how can I leave him? When I went to meet Francis in Care Network, it was like a whole world opened up to me. I had somebody that will understand me. I thought he was an angel to listen to all my grumbling and come back with ideas. He was fantastic. But what I liked more than all is when Sian arranged a lecture, a workshop, that we could learn something. And as a result of one of the workshops of how to take something that looks so far away, you can't reach to it, like it's on top of the mountain, and I climbed to the top of the mountain and I reached. And my goal was to go to the Grand Canyon, and I went, even I'm a carer.
So I just thought I'll just provide you with a couple of stories just to make it real and bring it home. Just to finalize my presentation and as a way to wrap up and summarize, I would like to talk to you about why identifying and supporting carers matters and making caring and carers visible and making support services inclusive is paramount. Making carers visible gives carers confidence as they become part of the recovery process for the loved ones. It helps them being part of a team, so that feeling of isolation can ease, makes them feel stronger, more confident, shows appreciation for carers, and it reduces the risk of them becoming unwell due to the caring role. And the benefits for professionals as well in identifying carers, information sharing can help with clinical assessment, treatment, ongoing care, recovery, as carers may have really key information that is relevant to keep the care for safe and make sure that the care planning is effective. They know when to spot a crisis. They've have to deal with them 100 times. So having carers involved in and being listened to in the assessment process for their loved ones is important. So how can we support carers? As individuals and professionals, we can support carers by making sure that our staff are trained, particularly in health and social care services, both statutory and voluntary by all means, in how to refer to support services, support early identification. It is important that carers access emotional and practical support as early in the process as possible, enabling carers to have a life of their own, really, alongside their caring role. It is important that we recognize in their expert by experience role. So as I said, ensuring that information is shared with them about the cares of the person that they care for. It is important to adopt a whole family approach sometimes, just to put things into context. And that might include young carers on the family who may have not been identified a priori because they may not come to health appointments. So this includes having a multidisciplinary approach by us professionals to care and support. And by all means, and that sounds a topic, but you know, talking to each other and make sure that we are approach care in a multidisciplinary way. And supporting carers paramount to navigate a complex health and social care systems, as we were saying, ensuring that they can access advocacy support if needed from colleagues such as our colleagues from the advocacy project, etc. And as a professional, something that we can do as well is making carers visible in communities where it might be a little bit more challenging for carers to be identified. I'm thinking of particular BAME communities where, for example, a caring role for several members of your, not even close family, but extended family is something that it might be expected of you. So why would you deserve or even go and seek support and advice from somewhere? Because that's just something that you do. It is important that certain communities, as I said, that they might remain hidden, that we make an effort just to approach those. So as carers hubs or carers centres, what can we do to make sure that we are more inclusive? Make sure that we use all of the data that we gather from carers to make sure that we shape service provision according to it, demographics, cultural traits. Are we accessing everybody that we need to? Are there gaps on our service provision? We really need to make more of an effort to look at the work that we do to inform us for future service development, and also how we do co-production, just making sure that it's not a buzzword. As I said, our chair of trustees is a carer herself. but make sure that carers are on the board, on recruitment panels, involved in any strategy development, not just the odd survey. Make sure that co-production matters. And how can councils and local authorities help? Having carers commissions and carers strategies that are up to date and relevant to identify emerging trends and needs, with all of the relevant people sitting at the table, and that includes carers as well. For example, it has already been noted, as we were saying before, that COVID has increased the number of unpaid carers in the UK by 4.5 million. So there's going to be inevitably a dramatic increase in referrals to services, also because of the increase on mental health issues. There's also going to be a strain on mental health services. So it's important to have the structures in place that can make services cope with the new demands, that services are flexible and commission according to need. And it's important that we have schemes in place that give carers peace of mind, such as emergency care plan schemes, as we were saying earlier. If your council does not have a formal emergency care scheme, Hammersmith and Fulham does, Kensington and Chelsea does, you can write your own in advance, ensure it's kept up to date, talk to other professionals such as social worker, GP, about what's in the plan. A bit like the Herbert protocol for dementia carers. So on my last slide, as promised, I have included a few links with further information on how to find a carer centre near you if you don't know where to find it, and also a few links for further reading. And thank you very much for being such a patient audience. And now on to any questions, if you have any. I'll try my best.
Yeah, great. Thank you. That was really informative and really moving too. If you could stop sharing now, then it's easier for me to see some of the questions coming in on chat.
Yeah.
Great, thank you. So quite a lot coming in on chat. Just bear with me. So a whole kind of range of things. And because we've got so many questions coming in, what I'm wondering is whether we're not going to be able to address all of them within the time span that we've got. So maybe, Sonia, you and I can work on this afterwards. And
yep,
everyone that puts any questions through to chat, we'll answer, and we'll send out the answers to those questions with the slides, with the recording.
Sure.
So there's a number of organisations that are talking about some of the things that they're piloting, digital buddy schemes, all those kind of things. There's quite a lot coming through in terms of digital divide. I don't know if you could... you just spend a few moments talking about that. You know, sessions like today and Zoom and all that kind of stuff is really good, but there's a proportion of the population that are not able to engage, and it's making people feel even more marginalized, less valued, even less able to contribute. So if you can comment on that, and then there's perhaps one or two more on things like carers assessments, and then I think the rest you and I can work on afterwards, and
yeah,
then
sure,
send responses out to people.
Sure. So with regards to digital exclusion, it is definitely something that concerns us. It is inevitable. As I said, lockdown has proved that being tech savvy and having not only that, but having the necessary equipment is not a luxury anymore or an add-on, is a necessity just to continue to access up-to-date information. So before the lockdown happened, we partnered with through corporate responsibility volunteering, we partnered with a few organizations that were supporting carers with knowing how to make the most of their tablet or their smartphones, just to make sure that they could access technology in that way. Obviously, lockdown happened, and you can't teach somebody how to go online when you're already online. That's a bit challenging. So we have invested on teleconferencing, for example, resources, just to make sure that some of the support groups that we're facilitating, they're also they can also be done on the good old phone line. Also, as I said, making sure that befriending is it's something that we are going to prioritize as soon as face to face can happen. Befriending, as I say, face to face might be something that it might be much further down the line, but telephone befriending, for example. So using the telephone as a resource, and then, as I said, just try to ring people in to digital where possible.